From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
Governor DeSantis claims some of the petitions that put Amendment 4 on the Florida ballot were fraudulent. The governor's opponents are calling that a voter suppression tactic.
Is creating an environment where people do not want to participate in elections.
Also this week, with abortions nearly unavailable in Florida, it seems more people are opting for pregnancy prevention strategies.
This is a much better option than having to wait too long and then go out of state if that's what you have to do, you know?
We'll also have updates on what's happening with a few of Florida's congressional district maps that wound up before the state Supreme Court. And we'll see how new rules concerning condo safety are getting some pushback. I'm Tom Flanagan, online and on air. This is Capitol Report and the end of week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee. Abortion access advocates say Governor Ron DeSantis and members of his administration are misusing their positions to interfere with the vote on Amendment 4. That's the proposed constitutional amendment that would enshrine the right to abortion in the state constitution. Regan McCarthy reports two lawsuits have been filed against a state agency website published in opposition to the amendment, and the state Supreme Court has agreed to expedite one of those cases.
The American Civil Liberties Union and Southern Legal Counsel call a website, along with television and radio ads published by the Agency for Healthcare Administration, a, quote, unconstitutional misinformation campaign. They say the materials contain false and misleading information about Florida's proposed abortion amendment, and the two groups have filed a lawsuit along with Floridians Protecting Freedom, the group behind the proposed amendment. Michelle Morton is a lawyer with the ACLU.
We're challenging the misuse of taxpayer dollars to lie to voters about this amendment. This is not what government is supposed to be. That's not what government is supposed to do. This is not normal.
The Agency for Healthcare Administration's website says the proposed state constitutional amendment, quote, threatens women's safety. But amendment supporters say it's Florida's current 6-week abortion limit that's putting women in danger. Lauren Brinzel is the director for the Yes on 4 campaign.
Doctors are afraid right now of going to prison, and they are unable to provide the best medical care possible because of these unworkable so-called exceptions in Florida's abortion ban. We aren't telling lies. We're talking about facts. We have the stories of Florida women who have been denied this kind of care.
Florida's current law includes a handful of exceptions, including an exception to protect the life of the pregnant person. But doctors say it's unclear how sick a person needs to be before that exception can apply. Meanwhile, the state argues its website and ads are fact-based and focused on transparency. And Governor Ron DeSantis agrees. During a question and answer session with the press, DeSantis defended the agency's website.
So I can understand, you know, why they're pitching a fit, because they want to lie. We have a responsibility to tell the truth about what the policies are in the state of Florida.
The ACLU filing comes one day after the Florida Supreme Court agreed to expedite a different case that also challenges the Agency for Healthcare Administration's website. Voters will have a chance to weigh in on the amendment in November. If it receives 60% support, it will enshrine the right to abortion in the state constitution. I'm Regan McCarthy.
Governor Ron DeSantis opposes Amendment 4, which, as we said, would enshrine abortion access in the state constitution if 60% of the state's voters approve. He says some of the petitions that were submitted to get the measure on the ballot were fraudulent. But as Margie Menzel reports, abortion access advocates say the governor's moves are intended to intimidate and discourage supporters from voting.
An intensive search is on to discover whether fraudulent petitions were submitted on behalf of Amendment 4. The search includes investigators going door to door, questioning people who signed those petitions.
Having police knock on their doors, ask them if they legitimately signed a petition. This has left those voters impacted, shaken, and just scared of their engagement with things like signing petitions.
Orlando Democratic Representative Anna Escamani, who supports Amendment 4, says the consequences of DeSantis' search for fraud are devastating to those targeted. Escamani also leads a third-party voter registration organization called People Power of Florida, which is already contending with new laws passed by the GOP-led legislature.
So I am concerned that law enforcement coming to people's doors is creating an environment where people do not want to participate in elections, and it creates this aura that you'll be targeted if you sign on to an initiative that the governor doesn't support.
According to the Florida Department of State, 35 people are alleged to have committed fraud in getting Amendment 4 on the November ballot. Department spokesman Mark Ard says those 35 people submitted nearly 37,000 petitions statewide, and of those, the state found 14,000 to be invalid. They're not included in the total that allowed the proposal to move forward, but Ard says more voters could have been victims of felony identity theft and forgery. The governor agrees.
This group submitted dozens of petitions on behalf of dead people. They saw those petitions being submitted. There are other petitions that have actually been validated where the signatures do not match the voter file. So they were getting all of those complaints.
DeSantis says the investigators are following the law, doing what they're supposed to do to combat election fraud.
We are not going to put up with it. And so if they identify, they have identified examples that are going to be referred to Florida Department of Law Enforcement, those are going to be pursued. I mean, you know, if someone's committing fraud, that undermines your rights.
Leon County Supervisor of Elections Mark Early says a high-stakes issue like Amendment 4 involves a lot of money. And as the threshold of getting amendments onto the ballots has been raised,
you get some incentives here and there for people to go outside the boundaries of law. I think one of the unintended consequences of raising the threshold for getting things on the ballot is that there's more incentive potentially for fraud.
But Keisha Mulford of the ACLU of Florida points out the Department of State is offering already discredited material.
These letters are not new. We already had these letters. These were petitions that the Supervisor of Elections did not verify. The Supervisor of Election Officers reviews the petition signatures to verify that the person signing is a registered voter in the county and that their signature matches their signature on file. The SOE will then pull the petition during that review so that they don't count toward ballot placement.
Advocates say they see the DeSantis administration's actions as a distraction from what they believe the conversation should really be about, protecting the ability of Floridians to access abortion. I'm Margie Menzel.
Most people who get abortions are younger than 30, and that same age group isn't always as politically motivated as older generations. But as WUSF Stephanie Colombini reports, Florida's abortion restrictions are inspiring some young people to get more involved in the debate.
Alexis Hobbs is braving the heat at an outdoor fair for student groups on the University of South Florida's St. Petersburg campus. The senior political science major is sporting a bright pink t-shirt and standing behind an equally pink table, trying to connect with students as they walk by.
Hey guys, you want a free tote bag? Slay. So
a group of young women approach to peer at the tote. It's got a drawing of a uterus on it and says reproductive rights are human rights. But something else on the table gets them more excited.
We also have free Plan B here, guys, if you want.
Hello?
Yeah.
Like just free?
Yeah.
Just
free.
Like Hobbs is giving away emergency contraception, sometimes known by one of the brand names Plan B. It's a pill that can stop you from getting pregnant if you take it within a few days after having unprotected sex. You can buy it over the counter, but it can be pricey, around $50. Handing it out for free on campus is just part of what Hobbs does to promote sexual health. She's part of a national network of student activists affiliated with Planned Parenthood called Generation Action.
I've kind of become like the sex ed person on campus. Everybody's asking me if I have like plan Bs or anything on hand, and I love it. I feel like I'm making a difference because that's something that I feel like every person is worried about, like while they're in college, you know, they don't want to ruin their plans.
And since Florida has a 6-week abortion ban in place, Hobbs says it's more important than ever that people have options if they don't want to get pregnant. The group of freshmen who stopped by her table agree. 18-year-old Nevada Steele and her friends each took a box of Plan B to have in case they or someone they know need it in the future. She'd rather avoid getting pregnant than risk having to navigate the state's abortion ban.
I mean, people don't even usually know that they're pregnant until 6 weeks, so it's like this is a much better option than having to wait too long and then go out of state if that's what you have to do, you know? So I don't know. This is just really appreciated.
Planned Parenthood gives students involved with Generation Action training and supplies to support their advocacy, but it's up to students to set their own agenda. Kate Thompson with the organization says there's been a lot more interest in the program since Florida tightened abortion restrictions. They say there were only 3 active Generation Action chapters in the Southwest and Central Florida region before Roe v. Wade was overturned 2 years ago. Now there are 18. Plus hundreds more around the country.
Because young people are here and ready, they know very keenly that this is about their fight and their ability for freedom and to have the power and control to make decisions for their bodies and their lives.
Hi, how are you?
When Alexis Hobbs isn't handing out Plan B, condoms, or period products, she's rallying students to support Amendment 4. It's a proposal to change Florida's constitution to allow abortions until fetal viability, usually around 24 weeks. Generation Action groups around the state helped collect signatures to get the measure on the November ballot. Now, Hobbs and others want to mobilize their peers to get it passed.
We already have a group of students who are very strongly believe in reproductive rights. We know that they're going to be voters for Yes on 4. But getting them activated and getting them out on the street and talking to other voters and stuff is going to be the most important for us.
Hobbs plans to set up her pink table on campus every week to recruit volunteers to support the Yes on 4 campaign, and she hopes to organize a phone bank later this fall. Hobbs knows some young people may choose to vote no on the amendment, but she says since abortion policy often affects young adults the most, they should be involved in shaping it for the future. I'm Stephanie Colombini in Tampa.
Republicans have more than a 1 million voter registration advantage over Democrats in Florida, and the GOP's edge continues to widen in the run-up to the November election. On the Deeper Dive with Derek Ham podcast from the News Service of Florida, Democratic National Committee Chairman Jamie Harrison talks about the registration gap. In this excerpt, he says Vice President Kamala Harris's presidential campaign and a proposal that would enshrine abortion rights in the state constitution have energized Democrats.
You know, there's been a lot of talk and a lot of people have written about it, and I'm, you know, one of them. Lots of navel-gazing about Florida, whether Florida is a deep red state, whether Florida will ever be a swing state again. Republicans now have a 1 million voter advantage over Democrats in the state. What do you say to people who ask you that question?
This is the thing. I've been asked this question about the voter registration advantage a lot. Well, Democrats had a 1 million voter registration advantage over Republicans, but Republicans still won the state. Why? Because voter registration is important, but it doesn't matter. And the end result, what matters is who turns out the vote. You got to have the mechanism. You got to make sure that you're educating the voters about the issue. You got to make sure you're turning out the vote so that people turn out. And that's the most important thing that happens. So the greatest poll that we will have is the one that takes place on November 5th. Can Democrats go across the state into all communities, urban and rural and suburban, and talk about the issues that are important? And talk about why their fundamental freedoms are on the ballot and who's actually fighting to protect those freedoms. That is what this election's about. And that's what Democrats have to do. So I'm proud to say that, you know, we have opened 12 offices, over 80 staff, and that's growing across the state of Florida. I'm told that almost 40,000 new volunteers have signed up since Kamala Harris and Tim Walz have became our nominees. The energy, the enthusiasm, the hope and joy and everything else, the momentum is on our side. Let's go tell that story. Let's talk to the voters. Let's get them riled up. Let's get them to the polls. And I believe on election night, we'll hear those three words that we heard years ago, Florida, Florida, Florida.
I heard you say that in your little Twitter clip. You said Florida, Florida, Florida. How do you translate that exuberance into action? You're here, you're doing the bus tour. You know, it takes money to print yard signs. It takes money to spread your message.
This is why those offices are important. This is why those staff members are important. This is why volunteers are important, because you've got to have the infrastructure in order to accommodate this newfound energy that we have on our side. You know, if you don't have the infrastructure to handle 40,000 volunteers, if you don't have the staffing and the capacity to do that, then that's wasted energy, right? That's wasted enthusiasm. And so we have been building this up over the course, supporting the Florida Democratic Party. Nikki Fried has done a wonderful job of rebuilding the Florida Democratic Party. There's still work to be done. But we are well on the path to see this party be what it has been in the past.
That was Democratic National Committee Chair Jamie Harrison on the Deeper Dive with Derek Ham podcast. Hear the full episode wherever you get your podcasts. The Florida Supreme Court's weighing in on the state's congressional redistricting plan to determine if it's fair to all voters. Voting rights groups have challenged the map in court as they believe it violates a voter protection law. Adrian Andrews tells us more.
Supreme Court justices heard arguments from voting rights groups Black Votes Matter and Equal Ground, who are both suing the state for a redistricting plan made 2 years ago. They claim when the Florida legislature passed the revised map in 2022, it removed the 5th Congressional District, a 200-mile zone in North Florida, which was created to allow Black voters to elect a candidate of their choice. Christina Ford is an attorney for the groups.
The legislature passed a redistricting plan that it knew did not comply with the state constitution under this court's precedent on the non-diminishment provision.
Florida's 5th district stretched from Tallahassee to Jacksonville. Former Democratic Congressman L. Lawson, who is Black, used to represent the area, but then the state divvied up the territory into four other districts. When Lawson ran for re-election in a majority white district, he lost in that district, as well as others elected white Republicans. Reverend R. L. Gundy of Jacksonville says he no longer feels represented in Congress.
And we're supposed to be a government of the people, for the people, and by the people.
Cecil Schoon, co-president of the Women League of Voters of Florida, is siding with the coalition. She and other voting advocates claim Governor Ron DeSantis broke state law when he approved the redistricting plan.
This is the law. The governor, understanding the status of the law, still came forward with a map that diminished the minority voice of Black Americans in Florida by 50%.
Schoon points to Florida's Fair District Amendment, which voters approved in 2010 to protect minority voting rights in Florida.
The citizens did that. The League was there. Many groups were there working. The NAACP and many other groups were working to make sure that that wonderful achievement was accomplished.
Daniel Nordby, the state's attorney, told the court during oral arguments that the new map does in fact diminish Black voting power, something that is prohibited in the state constitution. But he argues that wasn't the intended goal. He believes legislators did what they could to conjoin districts without committing racial gerrymandering.
It's simply not possible to show that a alternative remedial district could be drawn that both doesn't diminish and in which race doesn't predominate. The plaintiffs have had every incentive in the world for the last 2.5 years to try to show how it could be done.
Furthermore, the state argues the district does comply with the state's amendment, given it is now much more compact. No ruling has been made, yet Justice John Coryell expressed skepticism about whether the case impacts an individual person's right to vote, as opposed to an ethnic or racial group.
I don't think our cases, and certainly not the U.S. Supreme Court's cases, stand for the proposition that any group has a right to vote. When I go into a polling place, I go in by myself.
Coryell also questioned the state's role in deciding a case that at its core is about having voter protections based on race. He suggests that's a federal role. If the Supreme Court rules in favor of the voting rights group, a new map wouldn't take effect until at least 2026. I'm Adrian Andrews.
On Capitol Report, we're joined by Jennifer Krell Davis, Communications Director for the Florida Bar. I recall many years ago, Florida had a tourism promotion slogan that really didn't last very long because it could be taken in any number of ways, not all of them complimentary. But it went this way: Florida, the rules are different here. But that old saying really is accurate when it comes to the way that Florida handles the election of certain kinds of judges, Jennifer.
Specifically appellate judges. So it'd be the Supreme Court and District Court of Appeal judges. In Florida, they are on the ballot under a merit retention election. So what that means is that the voter will choose yes or no to retain that judge. And that system has been in place for decades. But it's really important because it's very far down in the ballot. And a lot of voters, once they get to the merit retention area, are unaware of what it is or what they're supposed to do. So we try to educate voters well in advance of the general election so that they understand what they're doing when they hit the merit retention races.
Understanding that the vast majority of the electorate has never had any kind of direct dealings with appellate judges or justices on the Florida Supreme Court, how can you find out more about these people? Is that where the bar comes in?
They can go to the votesinyourcourt.com, and we have put links to all of their bios so that you can do more research into individual judges.
Wonderful. And we hope that there is an abundance or at least adequate amounts of information out online because, let's face it, most folks who are in the judiciary don't really have a lot to say about themselves because of the prescriptions against a lot of different things when it comes to the third branch of government, what you can and cannot say. But still, there should be enough information for people to make an informed decision when it comes to yay or nay on the merit retention question.
Right. And it's really important for people to just understand kind of the difference between regular judicial elections, which are trial court judges and circuit level judges. Those are races where they're going to vote for candidates, and that's more of a regular race, although nonpartisan, versus merit retention, which is just selecting yes or no on whether to retain that judge. And yet again, those are Supreme Court justices, which we have two of those on the ballot, and then we have a DCA, which is District Courts of Appeal, which are the other merit retention candidates that will be on the ballot. And so it's absolutely educational materials, nonpartisan. Just we want voters to have what they need when they go to the ballot booth.
Jennifer Krell Davis, the head of communications for the Florida Bar in Tallahassee. Thanks so much for joining us today, Jen.
Thank you.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, a South Florida mayor is calling on state lawmakers to fix reforms he worries are hurting the condo market. His comments came as Governor Ron DeSantis said the legislature should act before next year's session to address problems facing condo associations and owners, including soaring costs. We get more on that story from WLRN's Tom Hudson.
Condominium associations in buildings at least 30 years old and three stories tall have until New Year's Eve to have their buildings inspected and set aside money for necessary repairs. That deadline could be putting the regional economy at risk, according to Sunrise Mayor Mike Ryan. He's very worried and thinks Governor Ron DeSantis and lawmakers should go back to work before the end of the year.
I think this is priority one. Our economy is facing a catastrophe or a calamity if we don't take action now.
The outgoing Senate President, Kathleen Passidomo, a few weeks ago rejected the idea of a special session. What is she missing? And would you like the governor to be very explicit and call the lawmakers back to Tallahassee?
I think the governor's comments plugged into an understanding that there's a lot of pain in this community and what we're facing. That is this catastrophe. I would support him calling for it explicitly. With respect to what maybe Tallahassee is missing, I'm not entirely sure. But I know at the local level what we're seeing, and we're prepared to support that effort to try to find solutions. But doing nothing is simply not an option.
The reforms require condominium buildings over three stories and at least 30 years old to undergo a structural review and have money set aside for necessary repairs. What specific changes would you be prepared to support if lawmakers go back into session before the end of the year, or even if they wait until the springtime?
The idea of fully funding this by January 1 is just not realistic for the vast majority. And so as a result, what we're seeing is a lot of units going up for sale and selling at a loss or even already. So the first issue is that they need to maybe spread this out and ramp it up at a slower trajectory. Second, I think we really need to come back and talk about why are we focusing on three-story buildings where we've not traditionally had a problem of three-story buildings collapsing.
It's buildings three stories and above.
Three and higher. And where that is from an engineering standpoint is interesting. But when you talk to folks in the community in three-story buildings, they scratch their head and say, we're not Champlain Towers. That's a terrible tragedy.
You think that the three-story limit is somehow arbitrary?
I'd like to know more about it. What was it they were looking at? There needs to be a more precise way of handling this rather than the large net that was cast from the seagrass to the sawgrass capturing every one of these buildings.
The City of Sunrise, has it offered financial assistance to condo owners facing significant special assessments or big hikes in monthly fees?
We haven't, because this problem is too big for any one city. There's no capacity for any city, no matter how well healed they are. And Sunrise, we're very financially healthy, but we can't possibly save our homes alone.
According to Realtor.com, the median price of a home sold in Sunrise, including single-family homes and condominiums, all jumped together in July was $230,000. That was a home sold in July, down 30% from a year earlier. How, Mr. Mayor, will those price drops, if they continue, affect the city government?
All of this is interlocking. When we start losing condo sales and our seniors can't save their homes, or they're being sold at a loss, or they just stop paying their maintenances, right? Then you start to have this cascade downward where associations get in worse trouble. Then they can't pay their bills. So there is an interlocking nature of this catastrophe that really proves that none of us are beyond the reach of what's coming.
The assessed value of property in Sunrise was up 8% last year, according to the Broward County Assessor's Office. Are you planning for that to be different or down this year with the kind of condominium sales and the drop that you're experiencing in prices?
I've already begun those discussions with staff saying we really need to start tightening our belts now because I am deeply concerned. You know, we came through the 2008 crisis, which was an entirely different crisis, right? It was bank created and investor created. This is entirely different. We're going to have to take bolder action if we're going to save. And so for us at all municipal governments, and I've talked to my colleague mayors around the county, we're preparing for what is, we feel, a potential Category 5 economic storm.
Mike Ryan is the mayor of Sunrise in Broward County. Mayor Ryan, thanks so much.
Thanks, Tom.
I'm Tom Hudson.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Stephanie Colombini, Derek Hamm, and Tom Hudson. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Evan Rossi, and I'm Tom Flanagan. We hope you'll join us again next week on air and online for more reports from the state capitol.
Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.